your book and really went into this and started to understand how when new concepts come up, especially in science, but also in philosophy and other ways, when it comes up, there is usually a big resistance. We could go back to Galileo and when he said, okay, hey, the Earth is not the center of the universe. And he got put in prison and he got censured by the Catholic Church and so forth. And we're still doing that. But what I'm intuiting right now is even if we don't fully understand this, what you call the simulation hypothesis, which is the name of your book, even if we don't quite understand it yet, I think about it, we're on the scent, like a dog tracking its prey, you know, like there are indications and there are many people that are actually following those indications. So to just reject it and say, oh, this is stupid, this is awful, we're not living in some video game. Are you kidding? I mean, I can hear a lot of people saying that. But, you know, there's something here that's indicating something to us. And that's what I'm excited about. And I'm excited about you and others that are saying, okay, let's follow this. Do we have any indication that show us that something is going on like this?
Well, you know, if we think of a video game, what is a video game? It is really information that is sent over the internet. And that information gets rendered for us, right, when we need to. So if you and I are in a video game together, we're not really seeing the same thing, but we think we are because we are rendering it on two different screens. Well, you know, it turns out that there's a big mystery in quantum mechanics, and you talk about entanglement as one of the big mysteries. The other big mystery is what's called quantum indeterminacy or the observer effect, right, which I know you have talked about with many folks on your show before as well. And I think the best way to illustrate it is to use Schrodinger's cat as an example, right? And that's a thought experiment by Erwin Schrodinger, one of the founders of quantum physics. And he says, if there's a cat in a box with some radioactive material, is the cat alive or dead after an hour? Well, we say it's a 50% chance. The thing is, to us, common sense tells us that, yeah, the cat is either alive or dead. We just don't know because we haven't looked, but it has to be one of those things. It can't be both of those things. And the weird thing that quantum mechanics is telling us, and this is what led Niels Bohr, one of the founders of quantum physics, to say that if you are not shocked by the quantum theory, you have not understood it. And what it's saying is that the cat is both alive and dead. At the same time, until someone observes and then records that observation in some way, which means that both of those realities exist. And so that's called a superposition, meaning there's two possible positions, alive and dead. And the cat, which in this case is standing in for what I would consider a bit of information, is both of those until you look at it, and then you see one of those. So we refer to that as the collapse of the probability wave. There's actually an alternate theory called the multiverse theory, which we can talk about in a minute, which also ties to this. But nobody knows why this happens, right? We say, well, there's a probability and one of those gets rendered. And so in video games, turns out we do this all the time. We have lots of probabilities of what might happen. And what we do is we optimize so that we don't have to render the entire world at once. So if my character is in a video game, like imagine that racing game I was telling you about, I only have to show what you can see around the car. I don't have to show what's on another planet. I don't have to show anything else until my character gets there, and then I can render just that part of the world. And so there's something we call optimization, conditional rendering, and it's an optimization technique. So most of computer science, and particularly if you have to implement something in computers, is actually about optimizing and reducing the amount of information. And this is why I like to say that computer science and information theory is eating the rest of the sciences, because many sciences which we thought were physical, like genetics, Well, genetics, the idea of the gene was actually proposed by a computer scientist named von Neumann well before they actually discovered the physical DNA, right? And so there's all these areas of molecular informatics, and all of this stuff is about information. And computer science is all about how do you reduce the information? How do you send it? How do you re-render it? That's why I can watch Game of Thrones, you know, on my phone, because it's going over the wire. But 30 years ago, you couldn't send that much information.
Exactly. All right. Let's say if I am in a simulation right now, and there are many probabilities available to me, but I'm picking out one probability. So my probability is to be having this conversation with you. So maybe nothing else is there except what I'm observing right now. And beyond that observation is what? I'm trying to hold this as, how is this possible? And how is it the observer takes the probability, the possibility into something more seemingly concrete?
Right. Well, this is where the video game metaphor actually helps to understand,
oh,
right?
Good.
So this is what quantum mechanics is telling us, is that there are both of these possibilities, but then we see only one of them when there's an observer. Now, in a video game, suppose that there's like a dragon or an eagle that's going to show up, right? And the video game decides like what's going to happen. And my computer renders it based on, it decides based on the choices that I make. So if I turn left, I'm going to see the dragon. If I turn right, I'm going to see the eagle. But it's not until I make that choice and put my character there that it has to draw the dragon or the eagle. Like, it doesn't have to draw the eagle if I go in this direction.
It's kind of available, but it doesn't render itself
exactly
until you make the choice.
That's exactly right. So we render only that which can be observed in video games. Pretty much what quantum mechanics is telling us.
Okay, so isn't this like one of the objections that people have to, oh, this can't work because if you're going to render the whole universe as a video game, then you'd have to have as many things as atoms in the universe or something like that. And they say, no, that's impossible. But so what you're talking about is the way video games work. They optimize what is being needed at the moment. And the rest is just sort of in the wings. Let's say if it's a theater piece, they're in the wings or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly what video game developers do and computer scientists do, right? Physicists tend to use the brute force method sometimes, but computer scientists are all about optimization. So if I said to you, I'm going to have a fully 3D rendered world like Fortnite, which I don't know if any of your listeners play, but maybe their kids do, right?
Yeah, no, they might vary. That's pretty popular. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the 1980s on my Commodore 64, I'd say, okay, we're going to make Fortnite. And they'd say, you can't do it because we just can't keep track of all those, you know, pixels, and we can't render them, and therefore it can't be done. Well, turns out it can be done. But the way that it can be done is, one, we have better hardware, but two, more important than the hardware is this idea of optimization in 3D models. And so 3D models render only that piece of the world that you need to see at any given time. And that's why I keep saying, you know, video games drive computation in many ways. And so that's one of the ways in which, you know, what we're really talking about is an information-based world that gets rendered.
Okay.
And then that rendering sits there.
Okay. If it's a rendered world or a simulated world, okay, then what is outside of it? What's running it? What is the base reality? Who is God? you know, whatever it is, that belief system we might have or feel, but still, who's running the game?
Well, you know, that's the big question, isn't it? Right? And it depends on your point of view, and where you're coming, and whether you're looking at this from a religious perspective, or you're looking at it from a kind of computer science or other physical sciences perspective. And there's actually two slightly different versions of the simulation hypothesis. They're not actually different, they're more like a continuum. Okay, and these versions are the NPC version, which stands for non-player character. So an NPC is like an AI within the game. Like if I'm battling an orc, or if I'm, or you're watching The Sims, right? The Sims, they are AIs controlled by code inside the computer. Or the RPG version, which stands for role-playing game version. And in a role-playing game, you are the player, and you have a character that you are identifying with, right? So you exist outside of the game, and you exist inside the game in a limited, smaller form that can't see or realize what's outside of the video game itself. And these are actually more of a continuum, because in something like World of Warcraft, you can have both. You can have player characters who are like the players, and then you can have the non-player characters. And so depending on where you're looking at that, you get slightly different answers. But I like to ask two questions. One is, why do we play video games in the first place? And then the second question is, why do we run simulations, right? So looking at the second question, we run simulations in order to figure out what might happen, right? Like the simulation of the weather or the simulation of a pandemic, right? But when you run a simulation, you don't run it just once. You run it multiple times. But the basic idea is that you are trying to figure out what is the most likely outcome or what is the most optimal outcome. Like you would actually run it to figure that out. Now, there's a concept in computer science, which was introduced by a guy named Stephen Wolfram, who's a physicist who became a computer guy. And he calls it computational irreducibility. And what he says is that there are certain processes that are chaotic. So you may have heard of chaos theory or complexity theory, that you can't predict what's going to happen at step 1000. What you have to do is get to step 999 and see what's actually going to happen. And you can't see what's going to happen at 999 unless you get to step 998, which means you have to run the whole damn thing, right?
Oh, before. Gosh. I love it. I love it. I'm going to have to interrupt you, but I am reminded when you just said that, something I learned recently with another guest about, it's called quenched disorder. Are you familiar with that term?
I haven't heard that term.
Okay, yeah. I'll tell you about it in a moment. I'm here with Rizwan Virk, and he is the author of Wisdom of a Yogi, which is also the subtitle Lessons for Modern Seekers. Oh, that's so great. For Modern Seekers, from Autobiography of a Yogi, and then also The Simulation Hypothesis. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Rizwan Virk, and just to quickly say, because I mentioned it before the break, is quenched disorder is like if there's an ant colony and they all follow the same trail and same trail, and then there's one ant that starts to go a different direction, and that direction is what enlivens the whole ant colony, because it will find new sources of food once that is depleted. If they keep going the same place, they'll deplete that food source. So quench disorder is what it's called. And that's kind of, I think, what you were talking about possibilities, probabilities, and moving into other things. But I really want to talk about the intersection where you have brought computer science. We are not used to bringing science, is not used to bringing science and religion together, or science and spirituality or mysticism together. So help us to know how these two things are starting to blend.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I talked earlier about how religions will use metaphors of reality. And one of the most famous is that of a dream, and you wake up from the dream and you didn't realize it was a dream at the time. In fact, in Buddhism, you know, the word Buddha, the root is the Sanskrit word but, which means awake. And if he's awake, that means the rest of us must have been sleeping. And so, you know, this is where, when I looked at what Yogananda said in Autobiography of a Yogi, which some of your listeners may have read, it was one of the most popular spiritual books in the West in the 20th century. It was read by people like Steve Jobs, for whom it was the only book in his iPad when he passed away. George Harrison used to give away copies of it. Steve Jobs even gave away copies of it at his funeral. You know, Yogananda was a bit of a modernizer. He would take the old yogic stories and traditions, and he would use modern techniques, and he ruffled a lot of feathers in India from the traditionalists from the way he would teach. But he used an updated metaphor. And he was wondering about the suffering of the world, particularly in seeing World War I images. And he had a vision where he was actually there fighting, and he got killed as a soldier. And he was like, "Lord, why do you permit such suffering in the world?" And he got a very clear answer back. And he said, "Well, think of the world as a motion picture, right? And a motion picture was new. There was the new technology at the time. And you would project onto the screen, and light and shadow would create this scene, and it would seem real to you. And it would seem like the actors were suffering, but the actors were not actually suffering. It was a key part of the actual storyline." And so, you know, he got this message, you know, what are life and death within the cosmic dream, right? That these are just relativities within this cosmic dream. And so that was a metaphor he used when people were wondering about things that were happening in their lives. And so I believe if Yogananda were alive today, he would use an updated metaphor. He would use the latest technology, right? So he would say it's like a motion picture, except we all are kind of, you know, we have the ability to change the picture. So we have our own script, and we're all playing in the movie together, but we're also watching each other at the same time. Well, what does that sound like? Today, it sounds like a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, an MMORPG. So I believe if Yogananda were alive today, he would say we are in an interactive video game, and that there's a part of you that's outside of the video game, and there's a part of you that's inside the video game, in the same way that there's one of us. And so, you know, when I began to explore different traditions, one of the things that came up was the life review and the near-death experience. So, right, people who've had near-death experiences report seeing their entire life not just flash in front of them, but actually seeing a holographic 360-degree panoramic life review, meaning they're replaying everything as if it was recorded, and they're replaying it from the point of view of other people inside the game or inside the world. And so as an engineer and computer scientist, I think, well, how would that work? Well, we do it all the time with video games, right? We stream onto, you know, Twitch. One of my nephews, when he was 3 years old, used to tell my brother, "I want to watch that Star Wars game." And it would be a YouTube recording of people playing the Star Wars video game, for an example, right? And so that tends to tie, like in the Quran and in the Bible, they have recording angels who sit there and record everything that happens. Well, that's a metaphor. It doesn't mean there's like a physical book, and what are they going to write it in, Arabic, Chinese, English, right? What it means is that you somehow have to look at the things that you did in your life, and that is part of the reckoning. And in Islam, it's called the scroll of deeds. Again, that's a metaphor. A scroll is a metaphor because 2,000 years ago or 1,500 years ago, you couldn't tell them it's like a movie or it's like a video game. But today, it's very much like a video game in that you can replay an entire game from any point of view. And if you put on a VR headset, it'll seem like you're that other person. And so, you know, when HarperCollins India wanted to write something about the 75th anniversary of Autobiography of a Yogi, they turned to me and asked me to write a modern reinterpretation of many of the stories in Autobiography of a Yogi. That book has stories like levitating saints. You have people appear bilocating in different places. You have teleportation. You have psychic phenomenon. You have palaces being created out of thin air. You have genies that are being controlled. And you have all these stories, right? And what are we to think of these stories? And do these stories still apply today? I mean, Autobiography of a Yogi was quite popular with a certain generation, but a lot of kids today look at this 500-page book and, you know, that's not so well known. And so I wrote something that's more along the lines of bringing these ideas of simulation theory into the old yogic concepts. And so bringing them together to say, you know, that the world is like an interactive video game and some of the challenges that we face, they're more like quests and achievements. So if you play a video game today, you don't just play the game like going around the track all the time and that's all you do. There are these things called quests, and then there are certain achievements, and you accept those quests. And if you do, sometimes they're multiplayer quests. You end up doing, you know, goals that you achieve with other people, which is very much like karma.
So isn't in the video game world, there is a place, somehow they're keeping track of the quests that you've done. So there is kind of a marking, like an angel, you know, writing your deeds and quests. And so say something about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that is information that appears not in the rendered world, like you don't see it, but it's there somewhere. And in Silicon Valley, we say it's in the cloud, which is an interesting metaphor. And turns out that cloud is where information is stored about what we did in the past and what we might do in the future. And we have what I call a database, right? It's a database of quests that you might want to participate in this life, and a database of everybody has a database. So everyone has their quest, and sometimes you have to do the quests together. And so that becomes a way to understand what is karma and how is karma used to pick and choose what types of experiences, you know, you might have in the next gameplay session, but also you might have a whole list of those, right? And, you know, there's some difference like in the Buddhist and Hindu traditions about what is the soul? Is there such a thing as a soul? Whereas in Hinduism, there is this soul, which is like a player and goes back in and takes on a different actor, different role, a different character or avatar.
So there, the soul is downloaded and at birth, you know, there's a download, right?
Exactly. And it's a process referred to in certain religions as ensoulment, right? And I say, well, it's think of it like what I told you earlier about the ping pong game, right? It's the point at which you put on the virtual reality glasses and you forget what you were doing before, right? And now you can only perceive what's inside there because it's so realistic,
right,
that you forget about it. Now, the word Maya, the Sanskrit word Maya, usually gets translated as illusion, and it is. But there's some subtleties to it, which is it's like a carefully crafted illusion. Meaning, like if you go to watch a magic show, okay, you know the guy's doing illusions on the stage,
right?
But you don't want to think about that all the time.
No,
you want to enjoy the
show. Yeah, exactly. I need to ask you, Riz, okay, how can we use all that you have said this entire time? How can we use it for the well-being for ourselves and for the planet? Is there a use for any of this? So what?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, remember that everybody else is a player and a character as well, right? And what you do to them matters because it is part of their experience. And you are going to have to relive that experience, and it's going to be replayed back for you, just like it says in some scripture, but also like the near-death experiences are telling us. The other big takeaway for me personally is that sometimes, you know, things happen in our lives which aren't that great. Like we have bad financial issues. We have a lot of health issues, particularly relationship issues. Some people are born with, you know, defects. And you know, it's easy to get into the why me, why did this happen to me? But if you think of it in terms of a video game, and you think of it as a series of quests that possibly you chose to have an experience that is more difficult. You know, sometimes we look at other people and say, that guy has it so easy, you know, and sometimes people say this to me, oh, I know this isn't a simulation because if it was, I would have made myself a billionaire. I would have given myself everything
right,
I wanted.
Right.
And well, it turns out there's, you know, in the Matrix, there was this kind of weird world. And they said in the first version of the Matrix, everything was blissful, but the human mind didn't accept it. Like it was no fun. There's the guy who created Pong and Atari. Nolan Bushnell used to say, you know, make the game easy to play, but difficult to master. And that is a great metaphor for life. Like, it's easy to play, you just have to be here, but it's difficult to master. And perhaps there's more difficulty levels, right? And so, you know, somebody who's born with a disability might have a higher difficulty level than someone who isn't. And they may have chosen to have that quest. That's a way to not let things bother you so much, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
perspective.
Yeah, to stay in the game. Yeah, Riz, we've covered just a brief little snippet of all that you have discovered, and people can pick up the book and really find so much more. Thank you so much for being with us. I just want to let our listeners know, I've been here with Rizwan Virk, and he spells his last name V as in Victor, I-R-K, Rizwan Virk, and he's the author of The Simulation Hypothesis and also Wisdom of a Yogi, Lessons for Modern Seekers from Autobiography of a Yogi. And to know more about him, go to his website, zenentrepreneur.com, or go to the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3793.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
I'm Willis Barnstone, translator of the Restored New Testament. Next time on New Dimensions.
You're listening